You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
The one thing you'll notice, and it's hard to kind of go back to it without the graph, but the calls that happened between 1 and 5 o'clock that morning actually happened when the car was powered off. We know that based on the power on and power off events. So those timestamps that are recorded with that 2 second and 1 second offset is actually from Mrs. Reed's iPhone as she gets back in the vehicle and her phone connects up and syncs back up. So the 8 second and the 16 or 21 second offset are the only offsets that we have to compare to calls.
Was that a concern?
It was a concern.
Why?
Because if you're using the 1 and 2 second offsets, that could be misleading because it's not actually comparing the Lexus clock with the iPhone clock from Mr. O'Keefe.
What's it doing?
It's comparing the Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone clock with Mrs. Reed's iPhone clock.
What other concerns?
Sure. So the other concern was a GPS point known as GPS 154, which if you remember yesterday, we talked about a little bit. So that was misidentified as being the end or towards the end of that 3-point turn. But when we look closer at all the location data, we can see that that actually occurs between 12:23:59 and I believe it was 12:24:07.
Let me ask you some questions about what compelled you to look at the 3-point turn and synchronize the clocks. Were you aware of Mr. Whiffen's report where he offered that the last user interaction on Mr. Whiffen's phone was 12:32:09?
Objection.
No. You were asked, did you consider Mr. Whiffen's report where there was a last user interaction of 12:32:09 by the user?
Objection, Your Honor.
I'm going to allow that.
You were asked if you considered that. Did you know that information?
I did know that information was available and existed, but I did not use that in my analysis for the clock synchronization.
Did that have any part of your motivation to do the clock synchronization?
No, it did not.
Were you attempting to match the synchronization with any of this other information that exists in data?
No, I was not.
You were also asked if you were aware of Mr. O'Keefe's phone that at 12:32:16, it ended its movement.
I was aware of that, yes.
Did that in any way affect your interest or your decision to synchronize the clocks?
No, it did not. So my primary focus and to adjust the clocks was because I thought the PowerPoint slides by Mr. DeSogra were misleading.
When you were shown Exhibit 190, can we have 190, please? You were shown this chart. Was this the entirety of Mr. DeSorga's report?
No, it was not.
Was there text information offered by Mr. DeSorga to give his position or explanation of this?
Yes, there was.
Is that included in this exhibit?
No, it's not.
Did you get a chance to read Mr. DeSorga's report, including the actual text explaining his analysis and process leading to this chart?
Yes, I was.
Did you look at Mr. DeSorga's entire report?
Yes, I did.
All right, move to introduce Mr. DeSorga's report.
No objection, Your Honor.
Okay. So this was triple D for identification. That will be the next exhibit.
You said as a result of Mr. DeSorga's report, you were concerned, so that compelled you to do your analysis that resulted in your May 8th report?
Correct.
I want you to take us through Mr. DeSorga's report and explain to the jury what concerned you about his analysis.
Sure.
With the court's permission, I'd like to put this page one of this report. Is this the front cover of Mr. DeSorger's March 5th, 2025 report?
Yes, it is.
Turn to page two, please. What do you recognize this slide or photograph coming from?
Sure. So this slide is coming from Dr. Welcher's overall PowerPoint slides.
When you first saw this slide, where did you first see, what source did you first see this through?
Through Mr. DeSorger's PowerPoint.
Well, Dr. Welcher works at Aperture, doesn't he?
He does, yes.
Did you know he was working on this case?
Yes, I did.
Was he providing you his PowerPoint or slides before this point?
No, he was not.
When you first saw this slide, did you see information about the timing of the TechStream event, which was the backing maneuver?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And what time did that show?
Can we blow it up just so I don't get the time
Please.
Wrong?
Up, please. I'm sorry. Up. Here we go. Thank you, Ms. Gilman.
Sure. So that's got the TechStream event ending at 12:31:43.
These TechStream events that are captured, do you know how long of the event is captured? How many seconds?
Yes, so approximately 5 seconds before the trigger threshold is met and 5 seconds after.
When this information that you reviewed in Mr. DeSorger's report, do you know what clock is used to identify the 12:31:38 to 12:31:43?
Yes, I do.
And what clock is that?
So that's a combination of the Lexus clock that's coming from the infotainment center, as well as the running timer that we discussed yesterday that's coming from the airbag module itself.
Is the source of that time important?
Yes, it is.
If you compare time from a different clock with time from a different clock and don't synchronize the two, does that lead you to an accurate result?
No, it does not.
When you were answering questions, you repeatedly were saying, according to the Lexus clock. Why were you offering that qualification repeatedly? One moment, please.
Sure.
Why were you offering that qualification repeatedly?
Sure. So to make sure that the jury understood that that timestamp was coming from the Lexus itself and was not an adjusted timestamp to Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone.
Could you scroll down, please, Ms. Gilman? Up a little bit, please. Thank you. The 3209, what did you understand that information to be?
Sure. So that is information I understood to be the last device lock recorded on Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone.
And what clock did you understand that time came from?
That would come from Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone clock.
If you reconciled his iPhone clock information, or if you compared it without reconciling to the Lexus information, what's the danger in doing that?
Objection, Your Honor.
Sustained.
Is there any danger in doing that?
Objection, Your Honor.
I'm going to allow that.
Is there any danger in comparing two times if you don't consider the clocks that they came from?
Yes, there is. So you could essentially be, you know, inaccurate time for when that event actually occurred.
If you could just scroll down to the bottom so we could see the rest of that. You mentioned the word variance yesterday during your direct examination. I'm going to ask you to look at that box that has the green around it. Is that an example of variance?
Yes, that is an example of variance between, well, so no. So I take that back. That is not an example of variance itself. That is an example of you know, comparing the end of the TechStream event to the device lock event.
Is that attempting to compare two different devices?
So that's attempting to, or, you know, that's not attempting to compare anything. It's just stating that the time between the device event lock and the end of the TechStream event, unadjusted, is approximately 26 seconds.
Is that accounting for synchronization or not accounting for synchronization?
That is not accounting. That is not with synchronization.
Can we turn to the next page, please? Did you review the next page of Mr. DeSorga's report?
Yes, I did.
And did it lead you to any concerns?
This page specifically, yes and no. So this page, again, is just showing the time difference between the end of the TechStream event and Mr. O'Keefe's last device lock event.
Is this another way of showing the information that was in that green box?
It is. It's another way of showing the information in that green box, but it is not a, you know, clock variance or an adjustment.
Could you turn the page, please? When you read this page, is this a opinion or conclusion?
No, it does not.
What is it?
So this is just pointing out that when the 26 second window, which they'll refer as John's interaction window, when that number is positive, then the phone interaction occurs after the end of the TechStream event. When that number is negative, the phone interaction occurs before the end of the TechStream event ends.
Did you have any issue with that slide?
No, not that slide in particular.
Okay, we turn the next page. Did you have an opportunity to review the next page?
Yes, I did.
And did you come? Were you in agreement with this page?
I was in agreement with this page, yes.
And what does this tell us?
So this page points out that two clocks are not always in sync. So again, to synchronize those clocks, you would have to have a shared event that occurred on both devices.
If we could have the next page, please. Any chance to make that a tiny bit bigger, Ms. Gilman? Were you in agreement with this page?
No, I was not.
Tell us what concerned you about this page.
Sure. So this page is potentially misleading to the jury, again, by using...
Should your honor move to strike?
Why strike that?
Just tell me what your concerns were.
Sure. So my concerns with this, that it was potentially misleading to the jury.
Objection, your honor, move to strike.
No, I'm going to allow that. That's his concerns.
Sure. So that this slide was potentially misleading to the jury because it uses incorrect adjustments to try and adjust the times.
How does it use incorrect adjustments? Explain that to us so it's very basic, please.
Sure. So as we kind of go through the next few slides, you'll see. But essentially what they're doing is, or what is being done, is they're comparing call logs, timestamps from call logs from when the phone was off. Suggesting that, again, that the lock event occurs after the end of the TechStream event, as well as incorrectly identifying the GPS point when the three-point turn ends.
Would you better be able to explain that to us with the further slides that come next?
Yes, I believe so.
If we could turn the next page, please. Okay. Is this just a label of what's to come?
It is.
And can we turn to the next page, please? If we could start, Ms. Gilman, with the top left-hand box, if you could enlarge that for us. Did you review this information in this box?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And before we get to your opinions, what does this information tell you?
Sure. So this is a snapshot from my initial report where I point out that the ignition on happens approximately 3 seconds before the infotainment power on event. So you can see that. I think we're up a little too high on the page. Yeah. So highlighted in the red. That's based on our testing where we identified that the ignition on, or your finger on the ignition pressing it, and the engine coming on and the vehicle coming on happens 3 seconds before the infotainment system powers on.
You were asked on cross-examination about that 3 seconds between the pressing the button and the infotainment system going on, but you weren't allowed to answer the question whether you considered it or why that was important. So I'm going to give you that opportunity now.
Objection, Your Honor.
Sustained. Ask the question, please.
Okay. Is there significance to that 3 seconds, and did you consider it in your report and your findings?
Yes, I did.
Share with us.
Sure. So when we make our adjustments based on the, you know, the event, so in this case, the 3-point turn, what we're looking at is the approximate time frame when that 3-point turn occurred via Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone. And then we're adjusting that for the approximate time that the text stream event and that 3-point turn ends. So as we sync those clocks, we're adjusting not only for the difference in the clocks, but we're also adjusting for this 3-second delay.
Did you accommodate that 3-second delay in your analysis and your conclusions?
Yes, that was included in my analysis.
Now back to the screen, the information there, is that text taken from your actual report?
Yes, it is.
Could we shrink the screen, please? And then the photograph in the bottom left, if we could enlarge that, is that as well from your report?
Yes, that is also from my report.
Did we look at that yesterday on your direct examination?
Yes, I believe so.
And briefly tell us what that depicts?
Sure. So that's during our exemplar testing, where, again, we've got it rigged with cameras that are recording video and timestamps of interactions we're having with the vehicle, which include powering it on and powering it off.
If you could shrink the screen and we'll go to the right, Ms. Gilman. What was the import of this screen to you in its entirety?
Sure. So this is not actually a valid way to adjust or synchronize clocks because, again, we're not adjusting based on a shared event. So the ignition on event occurs. You know, it's not recorded by Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone. But again, we are adjusting and including this in our timestamp adjustment.
If we turn to the next page, please. You were asked about the process of synchronization through phone calls or through the 3-point turn data.
Yes, that's correct.
Why did you choose to use the 3-point turn data instead of phone calls?
Sure. So I chose to use the 3-point turn data because it was closer in time to the event that was of interest. As well as it was based not only on the infotainment clock, but it was also based on that running timer. So once we adjust that first event to Mr. O'Keefe's phone, the second event is also based on that running timer, so it would also be adjusted.
What is the? Did you have any concerns about using phone calls specifically?
Yes, I did.
And what were they and why?
Sure. So those concerns were related to, you know, the phone calls that we could actually compare. And again, some of the phone calls that happened earlier or closer to the event of interest were not actually recorded by the infotainment system itself.
Why is it important to take an event closest to the time of the event you're studying?
Sure. So like I kind of said before, clock variance will change between devices as they are constantly syncing back up with reference systems. So a clock difference that you see at 1 o'clock in the day is not going to be the same as you would see at 2 o'clock in the day.
When you chose the 3-point turn, how close to the backing up event was that in time?
I believe it was within 10 minutes or so.
Was that closer in time or further away in time than the phone calls as a method?
That was closer in time than the phone calls. If you think back to the phone calls that we could have compared, those occurred at 5 o'clock in the morning.
If we turn to the next page, please. Did you have a chance to review this slide of the PowerPoint?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Now you see on the left is a box. Where's that box taken from?
Sure. So that box on the left is taken from my report. That's going to be my initial report.
January 30th, 2025?
That's correct.
Okay. And share with us what you were trying to express in this box.
Sure. So, again, this box is a...
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Sure. I apologize. Ms. Gilman, is there any chance we could enlarge the box on the left? My apologies. Okay. Please proceed.
Sure. So, this is a comparison of the calls. So, the infotainment call timestamps are on the furthest left column. So again, your infotainment system, when you plug your phone in, is recording and synchronizing your calls. It's not great about recording and synchronizing every call. So there's a lot of calls here that we don't have that we know exist based on Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone. So the calls that we do have that were recorded in the infotainment system, we can compare to the timestamps that those are recorded on Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone. So when we do that, there's a couple things we notice is during that 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock and 4:45 time frame, when we look back at the power on and off events, we know the vehicle was not powered on at that time. So the vehicle's off. So those timestamps are not coming from the vehicle. They're coming from Mrs. Reed's iPhone or the defendant's iPhone. And then the times after 5:21, we know the vehicle has been powered up at that point. So those timestamps are coming from the infotainment system itself. So that's why we can actually do a comparison of those timestamps and determine the exact or the approximate clock variance.
When you look at the call timestamps of 1:14:13, 4:38:16, 4:42:06, and 4:45:12, was the power on or off with the car during those four first calls?
Yeah, so with those first five calls, the car was powered off. And again, we see that, we know that based on the power on and off event. We also know that just by looking at the offset, it's a consistent 1 or 2 seconds. And that's what we typically expect and see between two iPhones. That's because iPhones are generally pinging back to Apple servers or GPS towers that are the same. So those times are pretty consistent and pretty accurate.
Was the power on by 5:04:28?
No, not at 5:04:28. It was still powered off.
So those first five events, were they reliable for you to use in synchronization?
No, they were not.
You gave us a number of reasons. One, the time distance between the event, and because they were phone to phone. Any other reasons why they weren't?
I'll strike the first part. Ask the question.
Besides the reasons you already gave us, are there any other reasons why this would not be a reliable way to synchronize two separate devices?
Not besides the points I've made already.
Okay. And if we could zoom back on this. The box on the right, is that from your report? Is that Mr. DeSorga?
That's Mr. DeSorga.
Was there anything about that analysis that concerned you?
Sure. So that analysis is misleading because, again, it's not comparing Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone to the infotainment system. It's actually comparing the defendant's iPhone to Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone.
Is there any acknowledgement anywhere in Mr. DeSorga's report that he appreciated that this was iPhone to iPhone rather than iPhone to infotainment?
No, there's not.
Did you ever receive any report from Mr. DeSorga that would alert that he appreciated that this was iPhone to iPhone and not iPhone to infotainment?
Objection, Your Honor.
Sustained.
If we could go to the next slide, please. Is this a similar or different slide?
Sure. So this is a different slide.
Okay. If we can zoom in on the left box, please. Where does that box come from?
Sure. So again, that's coming from the same page of my report, just highlighting the 5:30 phone call. And this is comparing the iPhone from Mr. O'Keefe with the infotainment clock.
At that point, is the power on of the Lexus?
Yes. So at this point, the power is on. So this is a comparison of the infotainment clock with the iPhone clock at that time.
Could you zoom out? That final box that shows the comparison between the defendant's Lexus and Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone. Do you have any concerns about the accuracy of that information for that time?
No, so I think those times are accurate, but again, that's at 5 o'clock in the morning when we're trying to adjust the clock variance, and it's too far away from the time in question. So if we zoom back in to the box, we can actually see in the data what I'm talking about as far as clock variance will change, you know, with time. So the phone call at 5:21, we see an offset of around 8 seconds between the two devices, between the infotainment system and the iPhone. And then at 5:30, which is only, you know, 9 minutes later, we can see that that offset has actually increased between 16 and 21.
In capturing this data, were there phone calls between the infotainment system and Mr. O'Keefe's phone?
Yes, those last two phone calls were between the infotainment system, or were recorded by the infotainment system with Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone.
How does that happen?
Sure. So that's, you know, when the device is connected up to the vehicle and you make a phone call, the call is recorded within the infotainment system and it's recorded with the infotainment system's timestamp.
Could you focus on the right-hand box, please? Did you review the right-hand box?
Yes, I did.
Was that from your report or is that Mr. DeSogras' opinion?
That's Mr. DeSogras.
Did you have any agreement with that?
Yes, so I do agree with that calculation, but again, that's 5 o'clock in the morning versus when we're really interested in around 12:30.
Can we have the next slide, please? Could we enlarge this? Do you know where this photograph came from?
Yes, so this screenshot came from Dr. Welcher's presentation.
When's the first time you saw this screen?
When I saw this presentation.
In Mr. DeSorga's report?
Correct, yes.
Had you seen this before that?
I had not seen this before that.
If we could focus in a little more, especially the bottom left hand. When you reviewed this, did you feel any need to do further testing?
Yes, I did.
Why?
So what we're looking at, you know, if we zoom back out, so what that is the 12:23:38 is the approximate time that the text stream event occurred. Now, what we want to do is we want to be able to compare that to the 3-point turn from Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone. What you'll notice, though, is right here, we've got a circled GPS point. So if we can zoom in there. So this circle here is actually circled GPS point 155, which is after this point, but we'll kind of ignore that. But GPS 154, and it's hard to see, the time is 12:23:58. When we look at that, what we see is that actually that GPS position is recorded before the 3-point turn even starts.
You mentioned 154 begins recording before the 3-point turn starts.
Correct.
Is the end time of the 3-point turn a time before or after that 12:23:58?
Sure, so the end of the 3-point turn logically would be after this point.
At the time you saw the slide, had you broken down 0.154?
No, not at the time that I saw this slide.
Could you zoom back out a little bit, please? The information in the right box, is that from you or from Mr. DeSorga?
That is not from me.
And when you read that, did that compel you to want to do anything?
Yes, it did. So again, my initial thought was to address this during testimony. With further review and further thought, I decided it was best to offer a supplemental report. What this is, basically the math I agree with, the point I don't agree with is that GPS 154 is the time towards the end of the 3-point turn, and now reviewing further data, we know that's not true.
The 12:23:58 event on the phone. Is that related to the first event, the three-point turn, or the second event, the backing maneuver?
So that's going to be related to the first event, the three-point turn.
Was there any other data that was closer in time to the 12, to the backing event that you had access to?
No, not that we had access to.
We can turn to the next slide, please. You've seen this part of the report before?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Having seen the earlier part of the report, does it help you explain and understand this diagram?
Yes, it does.
Is this your diagram or Mr. DeSogras?
This is Mr. DeSogras.
Do you agree with this diagram?
No, I do not.
Okay. Could you explain to us what this, from your perspective, from your experience, what this chart is trying to suggest?
Sure. So this chart is trying to suggest that the lock event always occurs after the end of the tech stream event. And again, that's using inaccurate adjustments to make that conclusion.
I want you to use the pointer and I want you to take us line by line why you believe that this is inaccurate in trying to conclude the time of those locking adjustments.
Sure. So it's kind of hard to tell. So what we've got is we've actually got two different sections. So we've got the top section, which is 6 events. So that's going to be the GPS event and those, That's going to be the phone calls and the GPS event that are calculated in this. And it's also done with the 3-second delay as well adjusted. But what we see is, so this obviously plus one is one of the phone calls that was from the defendant's iPhone time. So not from the infotainment system. So that's a inaccurate comparison. Same thing for the plus two. The plus one, the plus two again, the plus eight, the plus 16, and the plus 20 are going to be those last two calls. If you'll notice, the very last call, we can't really tell which phone call is the correct one to compare, so we're using both within that same time frame. And that's why we get the 16 or the 21 second variance. But again, that's 5 o'clock in the morning, so that's not appropriate for the time that we were interested in. And then the 20 second variance is coming from that inaccurate GPS position comparison.
Could we enlarge that a little bit, Ms. Gilman? On the 2021, is that plus or minus 21?
So that is minus 21.
The 20 and 21, is that based on different information than the 1, 2, and 8?
Yes, it is.
And explain again for us, where's the different source of the information?
Sure. So the minus 20 is coming from that GPS point 154, which we know is not the end of the three-point turn. It's right before the three-point turn begins. And the minus 21 is coming from the last phone call that happens around 5:20, I believe, or 5:30. And again, that's 5 hours after the time of interest.
The minus 20 and minus 21, is that suggesting that time should be taken off or put onto Mr. O'Keefe's phone for synchronization?
Sure. So that's suggesting that time should be... I'd have to go back to the other slides. I believe that's... Either way, it's suggesting that the iPhone lock event occurs plus 6 or plus 5 seconds after the end of the tech stream event.
Besides not accommodating for the timing of that timestamp at the beginning of the three-point turn, is there anything else about this that concerns you?
No, just that overall, these numbers can be misleading, again, because they're based on inaccurate adjustments and could lead, again, the jury to believe that the lock event always happens after the end of the tech stream event.
Could we go to the last page of Mr. DeSorga's report? Is this a conclusion offered by Mr. DeSorga?
Yes, it is.
Did you agree with that?
No, I did not.
Why not?
So based on those inaccurate adjustments, this slide is, again, kind of misleading in the fact that it states there's always interaction with Mr. O'Keefe's phone after the end of the tech stream event.
You can take that down and turn that off, please, for a moment. After reviewing this report, you told us you then engaged in further study for synchronization?
Yes, I did.
Did you call me on May 7th?
Yes.
Okay. And what were you told to do about a report?
On May 7th?
Yes.
Sure. So I would just finish the report and submit it.
Did you?
I did.
And when did you submit it?
May 8th.
And do you know that it was provided to the defense by email on May 8th? Do you know if it was provided to the defense?
Yes, I know it was provided. I don't know when.
Now, if we could have Mr. Burgess's PowerPoint, we can go back to page 38, please. Okay. After you explain to us.
Objection, Your Honor. Can we approach these on scope?
A 50-minute lunch conversation I was going to do. I thought it would be quicker. It's my fault. So, go for lunch and Mr. Burgess again.
Yep. Thank you.
All rise, please. Jared, close the notebook. Follow me. Session, you may be seated.
All right, Mr. Brennan, whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Sir, when I asked you about your first report regarding the protocol, you told us October 10th, followed by your supplement on the 17th. You did not remember the day that you first received any information offered by Mr. DeSorga. Is there a document that may refresh your memory?
Yes, there is.
May I approach?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I want you to read this. I just want you to look at it. You can look at any part of it.
Okay.
And look up when you're done, then I'll ask you a question. Does that refresh your memory the first time that you saw any information provided by Mr. DeSorga?
Yes, it does.
And when was that?
November 7th of 2024.
Before or after you recognized the megabyte oversight?
That would be after.
I want to go back to where we were at before we went to lunch. You had described two text stream events. I want to focus on the first text stream event, and that is the text stream event relative to the three-point turn.
Okay. Okay.
You had described that there was a timestamp 154. Just to reacquaint us, can you very briefly tell us the significance of 154?
Sure. So GPS point 154 is a GPS point that occurs just before the three-point turn starts.
And why is it important to identify when that turn starts and when it ends?
Sure. So what we're specifically looking at comparing is the end of the three-point turn. That's or That's going to be the TechStream event ending, which is near the end of the three-point turn, as well as the end of the three-point turn as recorded in Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone.
Was it important to identify the beginning and end of that event to come to a conclusion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty regarding the variance between the TechStream data and Mr. O'Keefe's phone?
Yes, there was. So we can't say, you know, we can pinpoint approximately when the three-point turn ends based on the GPS data, but best practice would be to use a range of time. So the range we're using is the time that the three-point turn starts to the time that the three-point turn ends.
Could we have from Mr. Burgess's PowerPoint number 41, please? Is this part of your presentation helpful in explaining the beginning and end point of that three-point turn?
It does. It does. So if you look at, and if you recall yesterday, the heading change, first heading change from a general north heading is depicted by that green shading circle.
Could you use your pointer, please?
Sure. Yes.
Ms. Gilman, can you enlarge just a little bit?
So again, so this green circle is going to be the, you know, the center of this circle is going to be the GPS point itself. That's going to be centered on the horizontal radius, which is the accuracy. So the green circle represents that the 16-foot accuracy zone. The black arrow coming off in a northwestern direction is going to be the heading for that point. And then again, the yellow is going to be the approximately, you know, 8 seconds later when the heading changes again in a southerly direction, and then the GPS points after that also continue south with increasing speed.
What part of the three-point turn event does the green circle signify?
Sure, so that's going to be the approximate beginning of the three-point turn.
And that time?
That's going to be 12:23:59.
The yellow circle, what part of the three-point turn does that indicate?
Sure. So that's going to be approximately the end of the three-point turn. And that time is going to be 12:24:07.
Is there any correlation between the times in the green, the time difference between the green and yellow circle, and the range you ultimately arrive at as far as the synchronization variance?
Yes. So that is what determines that range of 21 to 29 seconds.
This illustration or diagram where you've put the green circle, is that based on actual data?
Yes, that is based on actual data recorded by Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone.
That data, is it accurately reflected in this diagram?
Yes, it is. So again, the GPS point that is recorded within the iPhone, every point has a horizontal accuracy. And again, that horizontal accuracy is depicted by the green circle.
Is that level of precision used when you create this diagram?
Yes, it is.
The yellow circle, is that specifically reflected in the data or is that an estimate?
Sure. So that's specifically reflected in the data. So that is another GPS position that has been recorded by the iPhone. Again, with a horizontal accuracy, a timestamp, and a speed and heading.
How about the orange circles?
So the orange circles are are portions of the GPS positions leading up to this event. So if we went back one slide, you would see, you know, it would zoom out, obviously, so a little bit harder to see. But essentially what we've done is I've removed the other orange circles representing GPS points heading north and the GPS points heading south after the three-point turn. And I've just removed those for clarity to kind of clean up the map so it's easier to read.
On the left, TechStream 11621. Remind us again where that information comes from?
Sure. So that's the TechStream, that's the end of the TechStream event for the three-point turn. And that is based on the infotainment clock as well as that running timer from the airbag control module.
Does this diagram reflect the data that you reviewed to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
Yes, it does.
In breaking down this timestamp 154 and getting into the minute detail of when it started and ended, one of your charts, does it also show it numerically?
Yes, it does.
Can we have number 40, please? Before we discuss this again, where did you get the information to put in this chart?
Sure. So this is coming from Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone. Specifically, it's coming from a SQLite database that is recording locations as he's using the Waze app to navigate.
Is the information in this chalk or diagram directly from the data?
It is directly from the data.
Is this accurate to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
Yes, it is.
If we could zoom in just a little, we'll have to go left to right, Ms. Gilman. We start with the left. Timestamp 154. At what point in that three-point turn does 154 represent on the left?
Yeah, so timestamp 12:23:58 or GPS point 154 is approximately 1 second before we see the heading change. If we could zoom out just a little bit more. Yep, so we see the heading change represented in green. That's a heading change to 284. Before that, we've got a pretty consistent heading of 348 to 339. So that first heading change, as well as the drop in speeds, is indicative of a three-point turn maneuver.
The latitude and longitude, did that assist you in making the diagram with the circles on it?
Yes, it did.
How so?
So the latitude and longitude are the center points for each GPS point, or the center point for each circle.
There's a green highlighted row and an orange highlighted row. What's the difference between the two?
Sure. So the green highlighted row is, again, the beginning, the approximate beginning of the three-point turn. And the orange or the yellow is the approximate end of the three-point turn.
And the time between the green and the orange lines?
Approximately 8 seconds.
Is that consistent with the range that you've shown for synchronization?
Yes, it is.
Between point 21 or plus 21 and plus 29?
Yes, it is.
The inevitable variance that you found between the TechStream data and between Mr. O'Keefe's cell phone, could you share with us to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty what that variance is?
Objection, Your Honor.
Sustained.
Do you have an opinion about the time range and the synchronization between Mr. O'Keefe's cell phone data and the Lexus clock that shows the TechStream data to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
Objection, Your Honor, an appreciated approach at the appropriate time.
Okay, so answer that question, yes or no?
Sure, so yes, I can.
So I'll see you inside by then, Mr. Jackson.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Go back to slide 40, please. In reaching your conclusion about the variance between the defendant's Lexus as contained in the text stream as it relates to Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone, was stamp 154, timestamp 154, part of your analysis?
Yes, it was part of my analysis.
Was the running clock on the TechStream data part of your analysis?
Yes, it was part of my analysis.
What else was part of your analysis?
Sure. So in addition to the location data, including the GPS 154, that would be the running clock for the TechStream data, as well as the infotainment clock. From the Lexus.
How does the running clock correlate with the text stream data and with the time on Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone?
Sure. So they correlate. So the running clock and the infotainment clock are used to create that timestamp for the text stream events 1 and 2. And then comparing those to the iPhone, we can adjust and get a a clock variance for those.
Did you come to a conclusion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty about the variance range between the defendant's Lexus and its clock system and Mr. O'Keefe's phone?
Yes, I did.
And to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty, what is that variance that is needed to identify for synchronization?
Your Honor. Oh.
That is 21 to 29 seconds.
We now have number 43. Did you create this diagram?
I did, yes.
When comparing the Techstream event, the backing maneuver, to Mr. O'Keefe's clock on his phone, do you recognize the different timestamps on each device?
Yes, I do.
When you are trying to synchronize them, what do you do? What is the base? Do you start with the Techstream event and you add, or do you start with Mr. O'Keefe's phone and subtract?
Sure, so we could do it either way. Because we're wanting to compare this against other events that happened or occurred on Mr. O'Keefe's phone, we're going to adjust the Techstream clock or the Lexus clock to Mr. O'Keefe's clock. But you could do it either way.
The window that is depicted on this diagram, this is not the three-point turn?
No, this is not the three-point turn.
Which event is this?
This is going to be the backing maneuver.
The green, what does that green depict?
Sure, so the green depicts the range of time that this Techstream event ended. So based on our range of 21 to 29 seconds, and applying that, adding that to the Lexus clock, we get a adjusted time of 12:32:04. to 12:32:12, and that's going to be the approximate end time of Techstream event 11:62:02.
Now again, the Techstream data has a limit on the amount of time available?
Can you rephrase your question?
Sure, so you said a window is captured during a triggering event?
Sure, yes, so there is a window that's captured during the triggering event.
And what is that window, how much time?
Sure, so from the Techstream trigger, there's 5 seconds before and 5 seconds after.
Can an event be longer than that 10-second window?
Yes, it can.
And in this case, do you know at the end of this reconciled event at 12:32:12, do you know from your study what direction the defendant's car was traveling at 12:32:12?
It would have been traveling in reverse.
And at 12:32:12, do you know how fast the defendant's Lexus was traveling at 12:32:12?
I do not recall.
Mr. O'Keefe's last user interaction with his phone at 12:32:09, where does that fall within the 10-second window that was captured by the Techstream data?
Sure, so that falls within that 8-second window. So again, the Techstream event ends somewhere between 12:32:04 and 12:32:12. But that does not represent that the backing maneuver has ended. Just the recorded data has ended.
And in your review, do you have around this time any other movement of Mr. O'Keefe's phone after 12:32:16?
I did not look at that specifically. It was my understanding that Mr. Whiffen looked at that.
To a reasonable degree of scientific certainty, did both these events, the last user interaction and the window captured on the reconciled data for the Techstream, happen around the same time?
Yes, they did.
I have no further questions. Okay. Or I can approach later or now?
So we can approach again for me.
Your Honor, I move into evidence the following pages from Mr. Burgess's PowerPoint presentation. Move into evidence page 41. I move into evidence page 40. And I move into evidence page 43.
Okay, loud.
I have no further questions.
Great. Okay. Once we get these marked, I'll be.
Thank you.
192 A, B, and C.
All right. Whenever you're ready, Mr. Lessie.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May I, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Burgess, between the time you left the witness stand yesterday until this moment, have you talked to anyone about this case?
No, sir, I have not.
Has a filing ever been made in any court in which your educational background has been misrepresented?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Pardon me?
Not that I'm aware of.
Did I understand that you're based out of the Aperture office in Texas?
Yes, I am.
And are you aware of a case in the United States District Court, Eastern District of Texas, Marshall Division, titled Jeffrey Glover and Teresa Glover versus Graphic Packaging International, LLC? Are you familiar with that case?
Yes, I am.
And is it correct that in that case, well, tell me how you are participating in that case, sir.
So I'm no longer participating in that case. So if I believe correctly, that would have been a accident reconstruction case I don't recall, a year or two ago.
And so it was a case that you did participate in, correct?
Yes, I did.
And what was your role in that case?
Sure. So my role in that case was an accident reconstructionist.
And did you provide any testimony, deposition, or otherwise in that case?
No, I did not.
Did you, in that particular case, there were, like all cases, filings made, correct?
I'm sure there were, yes.
Thank you.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
I would like to have a document marked as the next exhibit for identification.
Okay.
Please.
Exhibit EEE for ID.
May I present to the witness, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Burgess, I am showing you a document which has been marked as Exhibit EEE for identification, and I'd ask that you take a look at it. Sir, Your Honor, may I remain here?
Sure, as long as you stand back a little bit.
Exactly, yes. Thank you, Your Honor. I'll take it even farther.
Yes.
Mr. Burgess, with regard to Exhibit EEE, do you recognize the second page and do you recognize any stamping at the top of each of those pages?
Yes, I do.
And can you describe what that stamping is?
Sure. So that is stamping for a filed date of 8/7/2023.
And is that a stamping of a federal court?
That I'm not sure.
If I were to show you a document, might a document refresh your recollection as to whether Exhibit EEE is a filing in a federal court?
Yes.
May I, Your Honor?
Sure.
I am showing you...
Could you show those to Mr. Brennan?
Thank you, Your Honor. I believe I did, but I want to make sure.
And just let me know if we need to mark.
We will, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you. Can I mark each of these for identification? They're,
yep.
Let me just give one first. If I could see that back in court report, I want to see if this is the second page for that document. It is. So it can be marked as one document for identification.
Exhibit FFF for ID. Thank you.
Can I reach over you, sir?
Yes.
Thank you. Sir, I am showing you what has been marked as Exhibit FFF for identification and ask whether or not this document can refresh your recollection as to whether the court filing that you reviewed in Exhibit EEE is indeed a federal court.
Yes, it is.
So that document refreshes your recollection that what has been filed is represented in EEE as a filing in a federal court, correct, sir?
Correct.
Now, what I'd like to do is to draw your attention to the second page of this exhibit. Is that a curriculum vitae of you and a picture of you?
Yes, it is.
And sir, under education.
Objection.
The objection's stayed.
Right.
Do you want to bring it over? We can take
I will, Your Honor. I will.
Jurors, feel free to stand up and stretch.
May I approach again, Your
Honor? Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Burgess, I'm going to have to get a little close in proximity.
Sure.
Bear with me, please. What I would like to do, sir, is to put before you again Exhibit FF for identification and Exhibit EE for identification. And what I would like to do is to ask you some questions, sir, with regard to the process in the case.
Okay.
Are you aware or do you recall in this litigation that, as typical in litigation, including federal courts, that as part of the litigation process, the parties have to designate their expert witnesses? Are you aware generally of that process?
Generally, yes.
Yes. And have you participated in the documents that need to be prepared for an attorney or a party to prepare documents and submit them to a court to establish the designation of expert witnesses?
No, I have not.
And so you have never participated or never been aware of a process like this?
No, I'm aware of a process, and that process goes through other staff members.
Okay, so it goes through other staff members where?
At Aperture.
Right. Correct. Are you aware that that process is occurring, even though it may be done by other staff at Aperture?
Yes, I am.
And in this instance, you were aware in this litigation that staff at Aperture needed to submit documents in support of an expert witness designation, correct? Even though you may not have done it yourself, you were aware that some person or persons at Aperture were performing that process, correct?
Correct.
And they were performing that process so that you could be designated as an expert witness in that case, correct?
Correct.
And so you were aware of the process, you were aware they had to submit documents that would establish you, your qualifications as an expert in the case, so that you could be designated as an expert witness, correct?
Correct.
And now specifically with regard to Exhibit EEE for identification with these court filings, etc., even though you've done it yourself, were you aware that this document, which is EEE, was submitted as part of the expert designation process we were talking about?
Not this specific document, no.
Were you aware that a CV was needed to be submitted on your behalf as part of the designation process?
Yes.
So you were aware a CV had to be submitted, but you're saying you don't recall this specific one being submitted?
Correct.
Does the timestamp up at the top of each page of Exhibit EEE, including this page that is your CV, match the timestamp, or is it different from the timestamp at the top of Exhibit FFF?
No, that is the same.
So it's exactly the same?
Yes.
And have you been involved in processes in courts where your qualifications, including your CV, have had to be submitted to courts to establish a designation as an expert witness?
Yes.
And can you conclude from these documents, including the timestamps, that the submission that was made to the court to establish your status and as an expert witness consisted of exhibits FFF and EEE?
Objection.
I'm going to allow that. Were you aware of that?
Yes.
Your Honor, at this point, I move EEE and FFF into evidence.
Yeah.
You need one more step, Mr.
And, sir, do EEE and FFF fairly and accurately represent the submission of documents in support of a designation of expert witness in this case?
Yes, as far as I can tell.
Your Honor, I offer these two into evidence.
I'm going to allow it over here.
May I get her briefing?
Yes, come on up. Bring those, please, Mr. Lester.
Yes, Your Honor. May I reapproach, Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm going to have to stand here again, Mr. Burgess.
Sure.
So what I would like to do, Your Honor, at this time is to offer into evidence Exhibit EEE and Exhibit FFF for identification.
As one exhibit?
As one exhibit.
All right, we'll do that. Can I record it for
me? And that would be the order.
Exhibit 193.
May I hand to the lawyer?
Yes.
Mr. Burgess, I am handing you what is now in evidence as Exhibit 193, I would like to draw your attention to the fourth page, which is your CV. And further, if I could, sir, draw your attention to the category of education, where it says BGS. Is it correct that there you state Bachelor of General Science in Mathematics and Business Administration, University of Alabama-Birmingham, Alabama, 2024? Did I read that correctly?
You did read that correctly. And this was filed in 2023.
Understood. So now what I'd like to do, Your Honor, is to... May I keep this for a moment, Your Honor, give it to the witness as needed. Thank you. With Your Honor's permission, I would like to publish a document that is already in evidence.
Okay.
Actually, maybe two, 183 and 184. Let's start with 183. Let's expand it. And then, Mr. Wolf, do we have what has just been to publish as well? So what I'd like to do is to publish first, with the court's permission, Exhibit 193 that we were just talking about, so the jury can see what has been the subject of discussion. And sir, if you, Mr. Wolk, if you could just enlarge, all we need is the education section. Now, Mr. Burgess, as I heard it correctly in questions from Mr. Brennan, you answered the question that whether you had ever filed a document that misstated your educational background in a court. Do you recall that question asked of you?
Yes, I did.
And your answer was no, correct, sir?
Correct.
So let's look at this document, which we've just gone through, was filed in federal court in the United States District Court, Eastern District of Texas, Marshall Division, which is a federal court, and attached to it is your CV, and in the line of education, it lists under BGS, Bachelor of General Science in Mathematics and Business Administration, University of Alabama, Birmingham, Alabama 2024. You see that, sir?
I do, yes.
Now, you stated, and now what I'd like to do is do a... Is there any qualification whatsoever in that line, that reference to BGS, qualifications at all, explanation, sir? Is there anything?
I don't know what you mean.
It's just a statement, right? There's words there. There's nothing after it that explains what's intended, correct?
Correct.
Now what I'd like to do, Your Honor, is to go to what was filed in this case, which is in evidence, and we'll go to 183 and then 184. Now, in what has been filed in this case, there is a currently pursuing at the end after University of Alabama-Birmingham, Alabama, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Let's go back, please, to Exhibit 193. There is no currently pursuing there, is there, sir?
There is not, but that was filed in 2023, so that would be an expected graduation date of 2024.
Okay, so it was, this document was filed in 2023. However, there's nothing in this document that in any way leads the reader to believe anything other than the degree is obtained on 2024, correct?
Correct.
So the only way somebody in the court system or a judge or a jury would know anything about this is to have to know about court filing dates, correct? I'll ask it another way, Mr. Burgess. You know how to write. Let's go back to 183 and 184.
You know how to write currently pursuing on your CV, correct?
Correct.
And writing currently pursuing lets the reader know that you don't have that degree, correct?
Objection.
In that form, it's a stamp.
You intend by writing currently pursuing, don't you, sir, that anybody reads this to know that you do not have a bachelor degree, correct?
Correct.
Now let's go back to what you filed in federal, what was filed in federal court in that case. And it does not have the words currently pursuing, correct?
It does not.
So correct. The reader, so it doesn't have that verbiage, correct?
Correct.
So isn't it the correct answer that you did file a document, your CV, in this federal court case that misstates the status of a Bachelor of Science in Mathematics and Business Administration?
Objection.
Sustained.
Excuse me, Your Honor. You stated again, sir, that you have not filed a document that misstates your educational background, correct?
Correct.
And the last time I'll cover it, you know how to put currently pursuing on anything to do with a Bachelor of Science, correct?
Correct.
A Bachelor of General Science in Mathematics and Business Administration does not exist as an offered degree at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, does it?
Sure, so that is an error. Clearly, BGS stands for Bachelors of General Studies, and that should have a with minor in Mathematics and Business Administration.
What is clear from that document that BGS stands for a Bachelor of General Studies? What is clear in that document about the definition of that acronym?
That is a known acronym.
Let's go back to Bachelor of General Science in Mathematics and Business Administration. That degree does not exist. It is not offered at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, correct?
No, that is not.
So therefore, an incorrect statement about your educational background was filed in a federal court in Texas, correct?
Yes, it was.
That's it, Mr. Lessie?
Yes, that's it.
Okay. Is there anything?
There is.
Okay.
The document that the attorney just showed you, did you submit that to the federal court?
No, I did not.
Did you ever see that document before it was filed?
No, I did not.
The document says 2024 for a degree. Is there a presumption whether you had it or expected it if that document was filed in 2023?
Yes, there is.
And what is the presumption if it was filed in 2023?
Objection, Your Honor, respect.
So presumption, well, strike that.
Okay. He asked if there was any designation to make it clear. If it says 2020, if it was filed in 2023, and it says 2024, what was your expectation at that time as far as your degree?
That I would complete my degree in 2024.
When you didn't complete your degree in 2024 as you expected, did you then change your CV?
Yes, I did.
To accurately reflect the change in your status?
Yes, I did.
And what did you change it to?
Currently pursuing.
Why didn't you finish your degree in 2024?
Sure. So,
Your Honor, still.
No, I'm going to allow it.
As most people can probably relate, work, family, and life many times get in the way. So as a personal objective, I would like to finish my bachelor's, but again, work and life gets in the way.
Did you ever represent to a court that you had a degree that you didn't earn?
No, I have not.
He asked you a number of questions about this 2023 filing, but didn't ask you any questions about the data. Did your opinion regarding the data change in any way in light of his questions about a 2023 filing that you didn't file and someone filed on your behalf?
Objection.
The objection is sustained. I'm going to strike that question.
Okay.
No further questions.
All right, Mr. Burgess, you are all set.
Thank you.
Brennan? I'd like to play a number of clips. If I could begin with clip 23.
So the approach from the north, we actually missed the turn. And John says to me, it's fairly, we just passed it. It's back there. It's on my left. I said, all right. So I pull into a nose into a driveway and back out onto the street, which I now own was Cedar Crest, and then come from the north onto Fairview.
Like the next play, clip 25.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.